And Corey, I do believe that yes, images is critical. Image and that coexisting with level of trust and confidence is critical. Now, you ask what can be done? What can be done is that that particular community see us as a friend, see us not as an enforcer. See us as part and parcel of their day-to-day activities in a civil way. Yes, we would have some tough love situations because that's the nature of discipline to create that element of tough love. And sometimes the tough love is manifested or is pushed in a particular direction that allows people to get on a bandwagon and not understanding the facts of the matter, and give the image of the organization a thrashing. So for me, one of the first step is to create that kind of relationship, that kind of consultation, that kind of friend. We are friends, we are friends, but we can give you tough love. And that is one of the ways to get into those communities that presents, or those blocks that presents some degree of robustness in their mannerisms.
I know there's a fine line to walk to go in and show the force that you need to go in to deal with belligerent criminals and belligerent persons within the neighborhood, and also carrying out your role in a very professional way, and a way where you say you believe that the police is a friend. But a lot of people listening, especially from certain community experiences, those who have WhatsApp, internet, and they can see the videos, will see that sometimes when the police go in, they assault the very people that need to give them the information. Albeit, again, as you said, I'm with the police on the fact that there are people who impede you in doing your responsibility, in your face with a camera, shouting all time vile things at you guys. So I know it is a very tough job. But how can we, when we talk, what is the police force's position on maintaining a professional, and I think professional is the key word in all this labba labba, how do we maintain a professional stance so that you do get the information from those law-abiding citizens that are willing to cooperate with the police to see us be able to fight crime effectively?
You know, one of our core values as a police organization is respect for individual rights, respect for human dignity, and creating a relationship that is built on trust. And those are the core values. Those are the values that we treasure on a day-to-day basis. Fairness, respect, dignity, human rights. And as long as we embody those values and we then demonstrate in a responsible way that we are professional, then I think that we would improve the gap or bridge the gap, so to speak, and get in the kind of cooperation in those communities. Now, it's difficult to sit here and to create situations out there without that kind of experience. What I have noticed from where I sit is that an episode can be for 45 minutes, but 30 seconds or 45 seconds of that 45 minutes can overshadow what went before and what went after. And I think that's the kind of battle that we have, because I can be doing something, and because I have the authority to do it, somebody take my picture, and before I even complete the act, it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it becomes viral, and everybody commit on the harshness of police.
Sorry, I wanna agree with you.
It's a longer story to that.
I want to agree with you on that. And my answer to that is to make sure that for the whole 45 minutes, you remain professional. So you can't find the 45 seconds to extract, to kind of muddy the rest of the video. That's my response to it. But I do agree with you that sometimes we see a little click.
The 45 seconds is out there already.
No. I understand what you are saying. My thing is, once the police remains professional for the whole 45 minutes, there is no 45 seconds to extract. That is my position. But I agree with you that the 45 seconds can be misleading. Now, to Inspector Cobbler, the whole idea of going back to community policing is one that was also placed on the table in relation to getting the community working with you, because the community actually builds a relationship with the community, the resident beat officer, as they used to call them, and so on. What is happening with that particular program?
Community policing is still one of the breadworks of the organization, and we still do understand the importance of really, you know, working with members of the community and creating that partnership to aid us in our fight against crime. So there are a number of programs designed to really help build cohesive communities and help persons to recognize the role that they have to play. And as the Deputy Commissioner rightly said, we are still trying to focus on that particular age group, that 60 to 25, because we are aware that a number of our adolescents, teenagers in schools, and you will see some of the videos circulating on social media, how young boys, adolescent boys, you know, reacting to teachers. Mm-hmm. So we have our school visitation program where we try to visit the schools and have dialogue with the principals and the guidance counselors and teachers and see if you could address those issues in the initial stages. We have the school liaison program, which looks at those subject areas of development, things like bullying, things like acts of criminality and the consequences. So we still work with partnership with the Ministry of Education to address some of those issues. We still have community officers who are designated to work within specific communities, who are, you know, there to engage the boys on the block and see how best we can work with them to pattern programs that will make a difference. So the society in general has changed dramatically, where values have now shifted significantly. I know there's this question where persons may want to ask, or we always challenge the rationale for police stopping and searching persons. But you would recognize, as the Deputy Commissioner said, we work based on intelligence. And because of the explosion of the whole ideas of firearms in our country now, the Firearm Act, Section 26, provides us that legal framework to stop and search persons once there's reasonable suspicion before a warrant. And I think this will help us then to try to address first the issue of gun crime and then use our community policing techniques to try to work with the community, help them to understand you have a role to play in maintaining stability in our society. So in addition to the school program, there are community-based programs. And there's one program which we are really facilitating right now, which is the Princess Trust International Teen Program. And this is a program that targets that age group, 16 to 25, young people who are unemployed and not involved in any formal aspects of vocational or educational training. And this 12-week program is designed to help motivate them so much that they will want to either go back to school or to get involved in employment. And having started this program in 2016, we are now in 2020, I've seen significant number of young persons who have benefited tremendously from the program. There's one child who would have spent some time incarcerated in prison who came from the probation department. And the program, he was into violence and all those attributes. And having completed the program, the probation department actually asked, what have you done to have made a 360 turn in this young man? So we have an array of programs. We have our law enforcement mentorship program. It's just a matter of getting young people, getting communities to recognize that there must be that partnership.
Okay, agreed. And I want to read and something here that's supporting what you're saying. Good morning, Corey. They actually sent the video that you spoke about, which I've seen before with the teacher and the student. And it says, this is where a lot of crime intervention has to begin. You ask my colleagues, Inspector Cobbler and DCP Boyce, if they agree. Mr. Cobbler has been a community officer for many years, and he would agree. We have to get serious from this stage, and teachers have to be a part of the team assisting with the fight against criminal minds. I want to insert a part of that which I'm very cautious about, and that is the interaction between students and police from a young age. I think one of the dangers of that, if it's done in the way we do it with DARE, or we do it with career show court cases, I'm good with it. But sometimes we have minor incidents at school And we have the police called in. And I believe that that starts to desensitize some of these future criminal minds to the police. They go and they get over the police and it becomes a part of them. They see the community, they see the police in the community, the police in the schools, and they lose that fear and respect, that healthy fear and good respect for the police. The other point is, I believe that we need to look at all sides of it. And that is to say that, yes, we need to look at the young people. I don't run away from that at all. But we also need to look at those in authority. And again, behaving in a professional manner, a mentorship role, and so on. Because in those videos, there are persons that are also pointing to the role that the teacher is playing in the whole idea. Because, for instance, there are people who, when accused of not being able to read and write, and they cannot read or write, those are fighting words. They will kill you because of the shame and the pain it causes for them. So I just wanted to highlight that. I want to go over to the WhatsApp. When we come into the lines are full and I want to go over to them, but I wanted to look at some of the questions that would have been put in part one to you guys first. This one says, I would like to hear at the outset from the Deputy Commissioner, what are the main pillars of the Royal Barbados Police Force's strategy to address serious crime in Barbados? Point blank.
Could you say again? I didn't pick up that.
Well, it says, I would like to hear at the outset from the Deputy Commissioner, what are the main pillars of the Royal Barbados Police Force's strategy for addressing serious crime, serious violent crime in Barbados?
Okay, if I may say prevention, one, early detection, two, and creating the level of presence that is necessary to ensure or assure that level of confidence in the day-to-day activities that one go about.
Okay, there you go. I want to give you another.
No, I would not go into details because I can break down those into, yes, we are going to do street operations, stop and searches. We are going to put people before the court. We are going to arrest and charge people for offenses that we think that are the precursor to serious crimes. Those are the kind of intimate answers that I can give you, but I just broad based it to say prevent is our thing. Detect, put people before the court. And the other one is to ensure that there's a level of collaboration and there's a level of a relationship with the better side of society.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to touch on a number of other things and then we go to the lines and we take some quick questions and comments from the public. But you mentioned the broken window program, particularly in New York. It wasn't about the dilapidated buildings. It was about broken windows, meaning, and I remember the mayor of New York in the 90s, he would have said, he says graffiti and murder are two different crimes, but a society that tolerates one will more than likely tolerate the other. A lot of people are saying that the police are too soft on some of the lawlessness around the place, and this is one of the reasons why we are now seeing high crime. And they're talking about people breaking lights, the wheeling, the bike guys, the kites, the all type of lawlessness throughout the entire society. And it seems as though there's no cracking down, there's no dealing with these small things, and these small things then become big things. New York has recorded success coming out of the 90s when they started to crack down on the little misdemeanors, the, as I said, graffiti, different things like that. And that was said to be responsible for the reduction of the bigger crimes like robberies, murders, etc. What is your position on that?
That, Corey, is part of our strategy to crack down on those small things, to crack down on those things that tantamount to nuisances, that tantamount to what we will call small crimes. But you must remember, we are a first line and there's a second line. So if the first line is very active and the second line does not necessarily share a view, because the reality is, if I arrest Corey for something that has a community spread, Corey goes to the court alone and Corey presents his case as Corey, the innocent man, Corey, the man that Kadir.
Before you not use my name, but go ahead.
So when in actual fact, you want to send a message that would create a deterrence in the particular community. And to me, that is not getting through from where we sit and looking at the consequences of many of the actions that we take to settle or to mitigate against those circumstances.
Let me say what you may not be able to say. So the police do their job, do a good job, bring people before the court, and then it drawn out, or people given a slap across the wrist. There's a second level. And that's why we're going to have a part three. We're talking to the Attorney General, who, from reading a lot of their different things that they've been doing in terms of the night court, having a specific court for murders and stuff like that, we've been seeing some level of improvement in the judicial system. But is it translating, or will it translate in the medium to long term and not the short term of what we are seeing in Barbados? Well, it's just gone 14 minutes before noon. We are going to go over to the line to our very patient callers, and we are going to hear from them at this time. Good morning and welcome, Brass Tacks. Sunday, you're on the air.
Good morning, Corey, and to the gentlemen. Now, those men that you have on the lines, they should be relaxing home with the family. They should be. And the deputy commissioner, there's no echoed what I was about to say. The police are doing the job. They are catching the criminals. It is the system that is failing us. That's what it is. Anyone who blames the police, something wrong with them. They're doing the job.
So you're saying that there's nothing more that they can do?
What else do you want them to do other than get frustrated?
Let me tell you, not me, but one of the things that people have been calling on is greater police presence, patrols, stop and searches, so that they don't have to go to the court and let the system take long and let the system get them a slap on the wrist. So they want to see more of crime fighting as opposed to judicial long waits.
If they don't have the numbers.
Right. And that's why they have to come here and explain that to us. So I don't think they should be home. There was home for many Sundays, and we just want them for one or two Sundays to explain. Okay. Of course, you could speak. That's what you hear.
You know who should be there? You know who should have been there? Everything. The Attorney General. He's the one that we should be. I don't want to use the wrong word. Even when the Commissioner of Police had that press conference, I was angry. It shouldn't have been the Commissioner. It should be the Attorney General. He's the man with total responsibility, and not a word in state. Well, I'm talking about COVID and flooding and all kinds of things.
But let me assure you that I only got through to him about yesterday or the day before, and he said he will be here. And that's why I'm kind of glad we didn't have them together, because I want to focus on policing. Then we're going to look at the Office of the Attorney General responsibility. I don't believe we need to talk to one or the other. I think we need to talk to all the stakeholders in crime, including you. The media have to play its part. The police, the Attorney General, all the persons we talk to, the psychologists, the sociologists. We're talking to everybody. Okay, and I hope that makes you happy. Okay. Brass Tacks, good morning. You're on the air. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Is this Mr. Comner that was sergeant? If it is him, richly deserved. I had an occasion to discuss something with him, and he was very good. If it is him, thank him very much for the promotion.
Yes, he's moving up the lines. Congrats, Ms. Inspector Cobbler.
Yes, sir. Now, Corey, my problem is with giving police information, and they are telling you that it's hearsay. I had that experience on two occasions. I believe you heard me say that there's a particular police station that I would never call back as long as they live, because of the way they treat you. And those things are good. But a policeman should be able to sit down or stand up and listen to you and give you some advice. He shouldn't left you frustrated, don't know your head from your foot. That's my opinion as far as the police is concerned. I don't know what the two they have to say.
But stay on the line. Let's get their response quickly, and then I'll let you go if you don't have a follow-up question.
Yeah, Corey, we recognize. I would not sit here and not agree that there are some instances within our day-to-day activity that we need to question, or we need to pay some very close attention to. and one is indeed the treatment of members of the public. The whole question of providing advice and at the same time creating the level of conversation that it's pleasant. As I said, policing is a very difficult, you can find yourself in a very difficult situation, you can find yourself in a very difficult conversation, and sometimes people don't want to hear the difficult side of the conversation. But notwithstanding that, we believe that our communication skills, we need to uptake those, that area of our professionalism. And while we may engage in much training, customer service training, police service delivery training, the individual in a particular situation is the person who translate that training, translate the professionalism of the organization. And if he finds it difficult to do at that level, then we are always going to be reputationally tainted for that particular or particular act. But we do recognize that, yes, we need to update the training, we need to update the police service delivery exchanges, and perhaps look more so at, from initial training, at communication skills mm-hmm. as part and parcel of the whole police ethos. For instance, we would want to ensure that, yes, people understand the job. This is important, because if you don't have competence and you have authority, you're going to let the authority override the competence, and you're going to be brutal. You're going to give, you don't use choice words if you don't understand a simple, if you don't have the competence in a simple area. So yes, we recognize that that is one of the areas that from where we sit, we will have to do a greater, we have to perform greater in that area.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's good for you, caller? That's good for you?
Yeah. I got other things, but I was listening, but I didn't want to hog the program. Thanks.
Please. All right. Thank you. This is Brass Tax Sunday. We're talking to Deputy Commissioner Irwin Boyce and Inspector Roland Cobbler on this Crime Fighting a Police Perspective on Brass Tax Sunday, in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Who's got conduits, fittings, dimmers, switches, ballasts, bells and brackets? We do. Williams. Who does wiring, installations, maintenance for homes and business? We do. Williams. From electrical contracting and maintenance to consumer products, Williams Electrical should be your first stop for all things electrical, including UL-approved products of proven quality. Who's got the know-how just for you? Electrify service, do we do?
Williams Electrical.